Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Thursday, February 29th, 2024. Hi, Dave.
Hey, happy leap day, Melody.
It is.
Honest to goodness, we don't come around this way but once every 4 years. Happy birthday to all the leap babies out there. How about that? You know, there's sure a lot going on about it. Once every 4 years, leap year is devious explorers and beloved saints, partying border towns and proposal-popping Irish ladies. Let's not forget, as I mentioned, all the birthday babies, because they do have some making up to do on the celebrating, you know. Since the beginning of time, man has always been improving the way we keep it. That applies to calendars, too. Early Egyptians had a leap year in their calendar. The early Roman calendar had an entire leap month from time to time. It was Julius Caesar, in fact, an astronomist, Sisigenes, who revamped the Roman calendar, giving it 12 months with almost equally distributed days and adding a leap day every 4 years. Then in 1582, Pope Gregory the 13th adjusted the calendar once again, because the Earth revolves around the sun once every 365.2421 days. 4 decimal points for you math geeks. 1 leap day every 4 years turns out to be slightly too much. But instead of shortening the leap day, the Gregorian calendar is designed such that leap days only happen every 4 years, except years that are evenly divisible by 100, but not 400. So there wasn't a leap day in 1900, and there won't be one in 2100. So a baby born on February 29th, 2096 will be in third grade on his first birthday, or hers. So happy bee to all the leap babies out there, however old you really are.
And we never really know. What is time? There were no clocks in the beginning of time.
It's so just the sun and the moon.
So time was manufactured, right? So we really are just babies. And we're all going to live to 150. Right? Oh,
there you go.
Yeah. What is time? And it really is interesting. I mean, they do have all these, like the measurements. I listened to a documentary once on how the measurements actually came about. Because remember, it was when they used to measure material, it was, you know, an arm's length or, you know, and that was the measurements, you know, and they, somebody came along and decided to, you know, make it a little more mathematical, I guess, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now they're stored, the old equations and how they figured out and so forth are stored and in big vaults. And it's really kind of fascinating what the earth and what is stored. I mean, when you look at the seeds and, you know, I mean, it's kind of.
One only has to recall the end of Indiana Jones and the Raider of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine the extent of the historical storages.
Well, let's go ahead and see what the extent of gold today. 2052, it was up $10. It was up a little bit higher, so we did hit a one-month high today. Silver was up 25 cents at $22.89. Platinum was down $1 at $883, and palladium was up 16 at $948. The U.S. Paper markets today, the Dow was up 14 points, the S&P was up 27, and the NASDAQ was up 134, still under 1%. European markets, France was lower, but Germany and the FTSE was the FTSE was up 5 points, and the DAX was up 76. Asian markets, they were all negative. China was stronger by almost 2%. 10-year yield, a little pressure, 4.244 on the 10-year yield. Oil today was down 20 cents, 29 cents. Not worth mentioning. $78.25. Natural gas is 1.85, down another 0.75%. 1.85. So there you have the markets.
Dollar back over 104.
Yeah, so we had a good day. So if anything, there could be a little pressure on gold tomorrow, but so it went up today, even though the dollar went higher. So, you know, we talk a lot about this, and I guess there's more info about the war of Ukraine. And now there's additional warnings coming from Putin saying that some of these NATO countries are in danger of a nuclear conflict if the NATO troops are deployed on the ground in Ukraine. I thought I saw, yeah, it was France. The French President Macron suggested earlier this week that European heads of state and Western officials, they met in Paris on Monday, had talked about the possibility of sending ground troops into Ukraine. And Putin said in his annual State of the Nations address, he said, the West must realize that we also have weapons that can hit targets on their territories. So, you know, we need to stay out of it. The way I see it, nuclear war isn't worth Ukraine. I'm sorry, but it isn't. And they're not NATO, and I don't know why NATO would get involved. What's the whole point of having NATO, whether you believe in it or not believe in it and so forth? What's the whole point if you don't follow the rules? So, what say you, Dave?
Well, without addressing your comments directly, I'll just talk about Putin more saying in his address to the Duma, the lower house of his equivalent of Congress. He said Russia is united as it faces the threats of international terrorism and challenges to its sovereignty posed by the colonial West, that he said was trying to bring discord to our home. Well, I think he's done enough of that. You only have to look back to the other Friday when his number one nemesis, Alexei Navalny, suddenly died, almost certainly murdered, in the isolated prison he had been wrongly imprisoned in. But invoking the adage of the U.S. civil rights movement, Putin said, "We shall overcome everything together." He praised Russian citizens, industries, businesses, along with the country's troops in Ukraine for their efforts in defending the motherland, which he said, ironically, I believe, is standing up for its sovereignty and security. Well, we'll see. But his once again mentioning in an unnecessary, I think, gratuitous manner that we couldn't rule out the use of nuclear war. I think obviously just ratchets the tension up another notch, particularly with this single-minded focus on regaining Ukraine as part of the Russian Federation's territory. Now, his annual speech comes less than 3 weeks before the Russian presidential election on March 15 to 17 that Putin's expected to win overwhelmingly, especially given the lack of any legit opposition figures in Russia now, with Navalny conveniently.
Reminds me of our presidential election. But anyway, yeah, I mean, I'm no fan of Putin, and yeah, see him trying to, but this has been going on since 2014, and a lot was happening in 2014 and 2015 and so forth, and sanctions haven't worked, and I still don't understand, the additional sanctions that were placed on various, it's just like, okay, but with all that said, it's not NATO's war. So the four of which were set to expire at midnight tomorrow, these bills and their corresponding agency, and it does include agriculture, veterans, housing, and affairs, they're going to, remain funded through March 8th, and the rest of the guy now. Yeah. Like, what's the point? It's going to be extended to March 22nd, and we are in agreement that Congress must work in a bipartisan manner to fund our government. The House is expected to vote on the deal as early as today, with the Senate to follow, and Biden to sign it after that, Dave.
Well, these funding extensions of less than 2 weeks in the case of March 8th are supposedly intended to give Congress adequate time to draft language for these agreed-upon bills and then give their members time to review the text and conduct other technical legislative processes, which are essentially preliminary votes. House Speaker Johnson had only agreed to extend the funding deadlines if an agreement on the six bills could be reached. Otherwise, the government would have headed into a partial shutdown beginning Saturday morning at 12:01 a.m. Now, government shutdowns don't tend to move financial markets, in any significant way, though they certainly can ramp up perceptions of economic uncertainty, giving temporary bumps to prices of gold and silver. Congressional leaders had been optimistic about getting a deal settled. But I note this is the fourth time since just October that Congress has had to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government funded to avert a shutdown. Yes, the drama continues, as does the dysfunction in our nation's capital.
And this time they really haven't talked much about it. And of course, that's an election year, and that's why. But it's just really amazing. Dave, I mean, it's like, how do they get away with it?
Well,
how do they get away with it?
Some might argue that we sow what we reap, that perhaps, you know, more of the people need to be engaged and rise up and, vote the rascals out of office. Now, it's easier said than done, particularly with hundreds of millions of dollars. Actually, talk about the presidential race, it'll go over $1 billion that's funneled into campaign financing. The system is so corrupt that every single member, 535 members of Congress, are touched by the system's corruption, making them complicit in this dysfunction that just affects all of us in many ways.
The I think this report a lot of people were waiting for today, the personal consumption expenditures, that price index. But let's exclude the food and energy increase, 0.4% for the month and 2.8% from a year ago. And of course, this is what everybody was expecting. The monthly gain was just 0.1% in December and 2.9% from the year earlier. You have headline PCE, including the volatile food and energy categories. They increased 0.3%, 2.4% on a 12-month basis. This is all from the Commerce Department. And there was an unexpected, and that always just cracks me up, unexpected jump in personal income. That rose 1%. Spending, though, decreased versus the estimate. January's price rises reflected an ongoing shift to services or goods as they say the economy is normalizing. Services rose 3.9%. Food was up 1.4%. And energy did fall 5%. Of course, we can see the reflection of that in the oil prices and gasoline prices. Both the headline and the core measures remain ahead of the Fed's goal of 2%, Dave.
Yeah, well, we know the Fed, which officially uses the headline PCE measure, its policymakers pay more attention to the core number, which they feel is a better indication of where the longer-term price trends are heading. The government report also shows that consumers are continuing to dip into savings as prices stay elevated. Personal savings rate was 3.8% in January, slightly higher than in December, but off a full percentage point from where it was as recently as last summer. Of course, the fact that the monthly jump was higher than expected, although not by much, it still adds to the uncertainty and no doubt pushes back rate cut expectations. The market now has all but given up on March and even May as dates for when the Fed will start cutting. Now they're looking at June at the earliest. And a lot of that depends, I think, on whether, you know, the coming in months inflation reports, continue to show an upward trend or whether they'll show that January was just a speed bump along the way to lower rates toward or lower price increases that are closer to the Fed's 2%.
Okay, I hear the music, and real quick, sales of existing homes, they fell, and we'll just touch on that when we come back from the breaks. Please stay tuned, you're listening to financial survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. And just briefly, heading into the break, we're talking about the sales of existing home sales. They did fall in January by the most in 5 months. And, you know, as we continue to see elevated mortgage rates, that kind of kept a lid on housing demand. Gauge of contract signings from the National Association of Realtors, that decreased almost 5% after surging to an eight-month high in December. So it was pretty steep. And, there's a lot of consumers are showing sensitivity to changes in the mortgage rates. This is from a chief economist at the National Association of Realtors. So, you know, once you get a little bit of a brief retreat below 7, and that will boost sales. So they're figuring out that 7 must be the magic number. And I don't know, Dave.
I'd like to think 4% is a magic number. Yeah. It seems like such a long time ago.
It does.
That we were there. Now, expectations that rates, interest rates, mortgage rates will stay elevated have pushed home financing costs higher recent weeks. Earlier this week, a gauge of mortgage applications for home purchases fell for the fifth straight week, nearing its lowest level in almost 30 years.
Well, I guess you have something about Levity is Golden today.
Well, yeah, sort of a different focus this week. I think we can call the topic falling under the category of a not-so-random act of kindness. Some of you may have read about this woman, Ruth Gotsman, who's donated $1 billion to the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in the Bronx. That money is being placed into an endowment fund, the income from which will fund free tuition for all of its students forever, for the rest of time. That's pretty amazing. Probably no one but Gotsman.
Unless the dollar goes to zero, then it's not going to fund anything.
Well, I should say until then, yeah. Probably no one but Gotsman, a pediatrician who spent her whole career at Einstein, would have made this particular donation. Certainly her philanthropy is going to have a multiplier effect. Interestingly, she was bequeathed her fortune by her husband, Sandy, who happened to be an early investor in Berkshire Hathaway. No word on how much gold and silver he had left her when he died in 2022 at the age of 96. But by her telling, she had no idea the sum even existed until she was given instructions to do whatever you think is right with it.
Yeah, well, how old is she, 95?
Well, she's got to be up there, I suspect. Berkshire Hathaway famously never pays a dividend, so the Gotsman never paid any income tax on these shares, and because they never sold them, they never paid capital gains taxes either. Eventually, virtually all their billion-dollar portfolio would have been subject to a 40% estate tax upon the husband's death, but now that too has been avoided because the college is a nonprofit. And it can sell Berkshire Hathaway shares without incurring any future tax liability. So now, look, the beneficiaries of this deal will be the medical students at Einstein, again, none of whom will pay any tuition beginning in August. These particular medical students who choose to study in this very poor area of the Bronx tend to be more idealistic than their counterparts at other med schools. They're much more likely to stay where they're needed most, that is, in the inner city or
not until rural, they get a free education
or rural areas of the country, because Einstein's blind to financial need. It can also focus on its own admissions by recruiting a more diverse group of future doctors, many of whom grew up in the neighborhood they'll be serving. We hope, wish them well, both the med school and the students who benefit, and hope that they'll use their jumpstart in their profession to good uses. Groundwork for a significantly higher level of donations in other places remains to be seen, but certainly the billion-dollar investment over the long term could transform public health in the Bronx. Let's see what happens, Melody. And that is this week's Levity is Golden.
I think that's really, you know, if you're going to do something, you know, I don't know if they have $1 billion or if they have $10 billion, you know, and if they had children and, you know, did their children and so forth. But I do believe people are going to get upset with me, but I do believe there should be some sort of a tax. You know, everybody else pays tax. And, this is how I see what's wrong with our tax system. Because you get people with billions of dollars, and they don't have to pay any taxes, and it's not right. It's not fair, and they get a lot of help. You know, a lot of these big businesses, multinational, you know, they all get, you know, help from government subsidies and things like that that helps them move into. Yes, they do create jobs and so forth, but we all know it doesn't trickle down either. So no, I do believe in. And it's not the same death tax that they used to have when you had a family that had, 300 acres and, you know, the father died and, You know, the next thing you know, they totally lost the farm, you know, and it, that has changed. And there's a big the death tax really is not what it used to be. And it really does target the bigger. And hey, if you benefited from, you know, government subsidies and you didn't pay various taxes over there, I don't have a problem with people having to be taxed at the end. Do I believe in tax at all? No, I don't. However, the real world that we live in, there's tax. And I believe they should be taxed on that $1 billion. So there, I feel better.
Good. Now,
I don't understand why anybody in their mind would sign up and submit data to the Department of Treasury's ownership information registry. Over 700,000 companies have done so. But the Treasury is trying to reach 32.6 million registrants by the year's end. Now, here it comes. Here comes the boogeyman. Scary buddy. Brian Nelson, the Undersecretary for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence for the Treasury Department, says, "We recognize we have a lot of work left to do." The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, they actually launched this registry on January 1st. Now, this was all established under the Corporate Transparency Act. This cracks me up. But the registry is intended to be a tool to aid law enforcement, banks, and regulators to detect financial crimes. Why don't they go to Congress first and dig out those corrupt politicians? Anyway, certain companies created or registered to do business before New Year's Day have up to 1 year to file. Newly created companies have up to 90 calendar days. So again, keeping track of you all, folks. Just, you know.
Well, it's interesting. About 98% of businesses or affected businesses in the country apparently agree with you at this point. Now, it's early in this sign-up period, but they're experiencing about 100,000 a week since the registry opened. But they're saying it should be closer to... what would that be? 2.7 million a month, which is, it's almost 700,000. So they're way short of where they think they need to be, particularly if they want to bring everyone into compliance or get everyone's registration information by the end of the year. It's an interesting... but not surprising progress report about this new law, really.
I thought they already had all of their international standards for anti-money laundering and counterterrorism efforts. I mean, good grief. And those are the same words, the thing to scare everybody into doing something just so they can control and track and so forth. Like, what? I mean, they already control and track everything that you do. What more do they want? It's freaking amazing. Just amazing. This is an interesting report with women. They're getting into the service business. And at one point in time, you know, this is probably a little, you know, women would only open up beauty businesses. Well, now they've opened up service businesses, more so than the beauty business in 2023. And they're calling it, but they are calling it the she economy. And women are opening more businesses that are traditionally dominated by men. And it is interesting that they're going into plumbing and HVAC repair. And this is all new findings from Yelp. Listings within the home service categories that were created by women grew 38% in 2023 from 2022. And that rate was greater than the national average of 32%. Now, in Boston, general contractor businesses listed by women grew 500%. Miami electrician and D.C. flooring listings started by women each saw 400% growth. Pressure washing in New York City, a home organization in Charlotte, and some handyman services in Chicago all grew by more than 200%. You know, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, very interesting. Just in my own neighborhood, there's a woman-owned or women-owned plumbing and electrician business. In fact, a neighbor just maybe two blocks away parks her van out front of the home, her home. That you can see the big logos, picture of a woman flexing her bicep muscle with a bandana around her her head, with holding in that flexed arm a big plumbing wrench or big pipe wrench. So interesting, it's an interesting image, but. This article says growth in women-created hospitality.
Sex
travel.
Still sells, right?
Indeed, indeed. Yeah. Well, the shirt, she's wearing a blouse, but it's
well.
It's
you,
not,
yeah, I know you. Were very descriptive going into the.
It's not so low cut, but she did have that bulging bicep, which was impressive. She ought to park that down at Planet Fitness. Now, growth in women-created hospitality and travel businesses like vacation rentals, travel agencies, limos outpaced the national average pretty significantly, 44 versus 28%. Miami, L.A., and New York City had the highest total number of new women-owned businesses last year. Now, Yelp trend expert Tara Lewis says, last year, women invested in themselves and their unique business ideas, helping create a banner year for entrepreneurs nationwide. Interesting, promising news.
My question is, where's the men?
Where are they? They could be continuing to work. They could be retired. They could be keeping the books for their spouse's women-owned business. Who knows?
All right. No, I think it's great, but I think it also shows the economy also. You know, the, plumbers, HVAC, electricians, they get paid big bucks if you show up. And, you know, maybe women will do a little bit better job in doing that. Maybe they'll be on time. Maybe they'll, but yeah, there's big money there to be had. So, you know, it's good services to get into.
Absolutely.
But again, you know, where are the men? You know, where are the strong men that used to do these types of jobs? And this is the question. You know, we keep hearing about a strong labor market, but that it's historically strong. But yet people are still concerned about their job security. There was an uptick in anxiety this week that came on. We've seen a lot of headlines about how high-profile companies are laying off workers. And these headlines, wakes people up. And it does give people an idea of the economy. We saw the same thing happen last year, a series of layoff announcements in late 2022 and early 23 was followed by a big jump in job loss jitters. And we've talked about tons of jobs that have lost thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs. And headline unemployment, we do see, we hear it's like record lows, but you have a lot of people working multiple jobs. So how does that mean that it might be a great economy, But they're not any good paying jobs. So when you have to work two and three jobs to get by with the rate of inflation, Dave.
Yeah. Well, this one economist at Morning Consult who conducted this survey says there's a disconnect here. I think he said people in general are on high alert. People are on edge with all the forecasts of recession and economic uncertainty. So it's just another reality check for the market that we find ourselves in, Melody.
I hear the music. We're heading into break. We'll be right back.
To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
One more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. I'm Dave Allen, Melody taking care of clients, this final segment. The Southeast U.S. has become definitively more prosperous in just a few years. It's part of a shift, they say, in the geography of economic distress in the country. The latest update of the Distress Community Index out yesterday from the EIG, the Economic Innovation Group, shows large parts of the country are becoming more vibrant. A series of mixed signaled reports. The share of people living in prosperous community has risen most in the mountain states out west, most notably Idaho, Montana, and Utah. By contrast, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and New York showed significant growth in the share of population living in distressed zip codes. The index is based on seven factors pulled from census data and aims to capture in one number whether a given area is rich with economic opportunity or faltering. Those factors include the share of adults who aren't working, housing vacancy rate, and growth in the number of businesses. And the latest edition is based on data from 2017 to 2021. because the new data only goes through 2021, it wouldn't reflect any benefits or otherwise to distressed areas of the administration's investments in infrastructure, energy, and semiconductor manufacturing, which were enacted by law in late 2021 and 2022. In Georgia, for example, the share of residents living in prosperous zip codes increased by 6.5 percentage points, and the share living in distressed zip codes fell by 8.8. The improvement was driven by declining economic distress in Atlanta's outer suburbs, patterns seen in the Research Triangle of North Carolina, and also Nashville, Central Florida, and Phoenix. Those shifts reflect both people relocating to more economically vibrant areas, and those locations themselves seeing improving economic conditions that, well, drive up incomes and housing demand. EIG's Keenan Fikri says the geography of well-being has clearly shifted over the past decade starkly in favor of the Southeast and the Mountain West. But there's still good news, even for the places that show a continued high level of economic distress. All these numbers are relative, meaning for each zip code that climbs, another has to fall. In absolute terms, even many places that count as distressed at these rankings are better off by some measures than they were in the aftermath of the Great Recession. Fikri said distressed zip codes today have lower poverty rates overall, fewer adults lacking basic educational credentials, and fewer adults out of work than they did the years following that Great Recession. The bottom line: a rising tide may indeed lift all boats, but to paraphrase George Orwell, some communities' boats are rising faster than others. Well, here's a bit of refreshing news. A record share of people with disabilities were working last year, according to a new report for the Bureau of Labor Statistics. These are people who face huge obstacles in landing jobs, that more of them are employed as a sign of a strong labor market, post-pandemic changes to work patterns, and the rise, related rise of remote employment. The Bureau of Labor Statistics classifies a person as disabled if they're deaf or seriously hard of hearing, blind or seriously visioned impaired, or have difficulty doing things like walking, dressing, or bathing, or have severe issues concentrating or remembering, among other things. A lot of these newly disabled employed happen to be veterans of foreign war, and that's a real good thing overall. And the ability to work from home has also been a boon to many disabled workers who no longer have to contend with a long commute or just a short one, getting into and out of a vehicle, and certainly have more flexibility to configure a work setup that accommodates their physical or emotional needs. Now, a shift happened at the same time. There's been an increase in the overall share of Americans who are disabled again. A lot of it due to the casualties sustained in battlefields, Afghanistan especially. 12.5% of Americans were disabled in 2023. That's up from 11.7% in 2019. Labor force participation rates, the share of people either working or looking for work for disabled men and women, have gone up a lot since then. For men aged 16 to 64, the rate was 41.5% in 2023, up from 36% in 2019. Participation rates for non-disabled men fell over the same period. Now, admittedly, there's a bit of a chicken and egg situation here. It's not clear whether more workers have become disabled or just more disabled workers have entered the workforce. There are a number of recruitment of veterans, disabled veterans particularly, across the country, that could be growing some of these numbers. Marissa Ditkowski, who's works for the National Partnership for Women and Families, says it's likely a combination of factors. She said COVID, too, was a mass disabling event. People with a disability still are far less likely to be working than those without one. They're also likely to be working part-time and earning lower wages. In fact, the headline unemployment rate for disabled workers was 7.2% last year, twice what it was for non-disabled workers. Of good news and not so good circumstances that follow this particular story. Here's another story about an obscure part of the U.S. tax code we almost never hear about. Donor advisory funds are charitable giving vehicles that allow donors to front-load tax deductions without necessarily giving any money to the charity. One of the perennial complaints about them is that the money tends to get tied up in them and never given away. Well, an important new paper from the DAF Research Collaborative suggests that worry might be a tad overblown. One of the big questions in the DAF world is how much money they end up giving the charity. Most of the time, that question is posed in the form of looking for something called a payout rate. That is, what percentage of a typical DAF is given away each year. This report, however, suggests that a crucial and largely overlooked role is being played by account closures. That happens when a DAF gives away all of its money and just closes down. It's called in practice, they say, to distinguish between account closures and account transfers, where DAF is moved to, say, a different custodian. But two data points suggest that closures could be driving a very large portion of DAF giving. Data show that more than half of all currently operating DAFs were opened just in the most recent 5 years. That's not because DAFs are seeing a massive surge of new openings. They're not. So it has to be because older DAFs have mostly been closed, right? Well, while the mean payout rate for active DAFs is 17%, the rate for all DAFs, including closures, is 22%. That's well above the standard foundation payout rate of just 5%. About 22% of DAFs are inactive and have paid out no charitable contributions over the past 3 years, but they tend to be smaller and younger on average. And while 65% of DAFs contain less than $100,000, those DAFs in aggregate account for only a little over 3% of all donor advisory fund monies. Some DAFs act a bit like cheap and easy foundations designed to exist in perpetuity and across generations. There's reason to believe that most don't. Instead, the money is placed into the giving vehicle while it still has windfall status before it becomes an entrenched part of personal wealth. Then, a few years later, when a suitable destination for the money is found, it's given away. Thus, if young DAFs have low payout rates, that might not be a major cause of concern. There's a good chance that within a few years, they'll actually be fully given away. Well, that's something we don't read. Hey, turns out that Ukraine can borrow money against frozen Russian assets. That's the verdict of the guru of all things related to sovereign debt, Lee Bukite. As I talked about on Tuesday's show and wrote about in last week's newsletter, there are many practical and legal obstacles to Ukraine being able to use the Russian money that the U.S. and other Western governments have frozen. But in a new paper, which Bukite co-wrote with Hugo Dixon of Reuters and a former National Security Deputy National Security Advisor, Dilip Singh, they seem to have found a way around these obstacles. Under Bukite's plan, Ukraine would borrow money directly from G7 governments rather than issuing a bond to, say, private sector investors. The funding from G7 countries to Ukraine would be what's called a limited recourse loan, with the Ukraine government itself having no repayment obligation and having to pay no interest. So when an international court awards war damages against Russia, the G7 countries could foreclose on the loan and seize the collateral, Ukraine's claim for reparations against Russia. That claim would then belong to the G7, which could reduce the amount of the amount outstanding by the amount currently frozen, $300 billion under the law of set-off, effectively repay the loan. Although there are $300 billion in frozen Russian assets today, the initial loan wouldn't have to be that big. And instead, there could be a smaller initial payment with future payouts given as they're needed. One of the promising aspects of this kind of structure is that it gives the G7 an important seat at the table in any treaty negotiations when the Ukraine-Russia war is hopefully coming to an end someday. And that's something that private sector bondholders would certainly not want. If the G7 wanted to allow Russia to access its frozen money in return for ending the war, they could do so with the knowledge, that is, that they would have to write off their loan to Ukraine. Now, this is a structure that allows governments to lend money to Ukraine without Ukraine ever having to pay it back out of domestic tax revenues, which are going to be very, very low for years to come. Just another way Ukraine could be able to rebuild if the powers that be can somehow get themselves to the negotiating table. Buying a vehicle is getting more expensive. Listen to this. 1 in 10 drivers spending over 30% of their monthly take-home pay on auto loans, according to a new MarketWatch study. They used to talk about the 30% on rent or mortgage payments. Survey looked at 1,000 drivers and asked how their monthly car payments affected their finances and stress levels. Well, kind of predictably, about 40% of drivers say they can't afford repairs and upgrades needed for their cars. Auto loans also prevent drivers from meeting other financial needs. Another 40% said they couldn't afford basic essentials because of their high car payments. To make ends meet, drivers sacrifice spending in numerous other areas. About 25% stopped eating out as much, while 13% stopped getting food delivery and directed that money toward their car-related expenses. Wow, that's interesting. High auto loans are contributing to more than just financial strain. 20% of drivers say they're very or extremely stressed due to overwhelming car costs. That's again in this MarketWatch study. Almost 8% of auto loans became delinquent when annualized. That's according to a separate study by the New York. Boy, 30% of income on a car. Well, it can't be so surprised with as much as both new and used vehicle prices skyrocketed during the pandemic. Now are just beginning to come down slightly. Certainly not surprised by this news. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back next Tuesday. Melody back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week. Also be on the lookout for our blog in your email inboxes in the AM. Thanks always to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good night. Bye-bye. There used to be a single penny left for me.